You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's episode of Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. Our guest today is Grace Harupian, a partner with Fisher and Phillips. But before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Frangie, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 4 p.m., and all are brought to you live on octalkradio.net. Our call-in numbers are 949-713-6443 and 949-713-6447. So if you'd like to participate in the discussion, be sure to call in with your questions and comments and join me on the air. Well, let me introduce you to Grace Harupian, who's an attorney specializing in employment cases representing the employer. She has an extensive background in a variety of employment cases, including claims for civil rights violations, harassment, discrimination, retaliation, wrongful practices, misappropriation of trade secrets, and class action disputes. Woo, that's a negative sentence. In addition, the area I'm most anxious to hear her talk about today is she provides preventative counseling and presents seminars and workshops on employment issues to executives, supervisors, managers, and HR professionals. Grace, welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show.
Well, hello, Doug. Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure, totally. Well, look, to get started, why don't you share a little bit with our audience what you did prior to joining Fisher & Phillips?
Well, prior to joining Fisher & Phillips, for the last eight years of my career, I've been a lawyer for the last 16 years. I was a partner at a national law firm, and I joined Fisher & Phillips about a year ago.
About a year ago?
Yes, about a year ago. Prior to joining here, what I did was I headed up the California practice group, employment law practice group for a prior firm. And then ultimately, about a year ago, when I had the opportunity to join this firm, of course, I was absolutely thrilled to do so. So that's what brings me here.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about what the firm does and what your role in the firm is, your specialty.
Sure. Well, our firm really does one thing, and what we do nationwide is to focus on labor and employment law on management side. That is our area of expertise. We don't really get into anything else. And that's the one thing that we do and the one thing that I think that we do very well. And, you know, and if I can add, Doug, this was really one of the main reasons that I decided to join Fisher & Phillips about a year ago from my prior firm. Because whereas I had come from a full-service firm that really did numerous areas of law, here, when I came to Fisher & Phillips, it just really opened the door for me to focus my practice on the one thing that I had already been doing, along with individuals in a firm that just had extensive, absolutely extensive, deep and broad expertise in this area of law.
And how did that become your expertise, really? What drew you to that area?
Well, as I said, I've been in practice for about 16 years. When I initially started my practice as a lawyer many years ago, I initially focused on business litigation. And what happened over the course of the years in doing business litigation or business types of cases with clients, I would inevitably get involved with HR issues, personnel issues, employment claims. And the more I was involved in those cases, the more I really enjoyed this area of law, because not only are you dealing with the legal aspects, but it really involves the human nature of things. I've been told many times, and I think I really agree, employment law is one of those areas that tends to be a very emotional area of law, similar to family law. So certainly you have interesting facts, you have interesting dynamics, and you're very rarely bored in what you're doing. So that was a big attraction to me in selecting this area.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the questions, and I think I mentioned this to you ahead of time, Grace, is that we like to ask all our guests what their guiding principle is. What particular experience or key lesson have you learned in your career that kind of guides you in dealing with people on a daily basis?
Well, there are several. This is a really tough question because there's numerous things that I can talk about. But I think if I were to hone in on a single thing, what probably would be my principal guiding principle is the fact that you really have to know your clients. And you have to really take the time not only to know the business that your clients are in, but you really have to have an understanding of the business philosophy and the various individuals that you're dealing with, because you can have the same set of facts apply in two different companies, and the approach that you might want to take, the strategies that you might want to use, or the end results, your objectives may be very different depending on who you are dealing with. So I think it becomes very, very important for you to really have an understanding who it is that you're partnering with. So that's the one thing. The other thing that kind of goes along with that is that you have to be prepared enough as an attorney to sometimes sit down with your clients and to be very truthful about what the facts are, whether or not they perhaps took some steps that weren't great and that may come back to hurt them in a litigation. Because I think that's one of those things that really comes with the number of years of experience in law. Because early on, what we see, and I think, you know, for myself, I can tell you, your experience level is that, you know, sometimes you don't want to tell your clients that perhaps they didn't take the best course of action and therefore they may be exposed to certain liability. I mean, these are tough conversations to have with people. But I think in addition to knowing who your clients are, you have to be able to have a good communication with them to be able to tell them what you really think. And even sometimes on those days when they don't want to really hear what you have to say. So I think if you stay true to that, that you are really going to have the best chances of success with the clients that you're working with.
Well, that certainly answers that. Thank you very much. You know, one of the things that fascinated me when we were chatting earlier is you talk about preventative counseling. And you know that our show, really, we have a lot of coaches, a lot of HR people listening. And, you know, typically HR people tend to think of keep me from getting sued, keep me out of legal trouble. But preventative counseling, I don't hear that all the time. Tell me a little bit about what you do in that area.
Well, there's many components to preventative counseling. I think you touched on the one. The most obvious is to have open lines of communication with your HR professionals or your general counsel in a particular business, where prior to making a personnel decision, the professional or the general counsel will pick up the phone and have your input as before taking a particular a step with an employee. Or alternatively, they may want to institute a particular policy and they may call you and want to make sure that that those policies are going to be drafted in a way that's going to be compliant with the law. So the first important component of it is certainly have this one-on-one dialogue where you are really very much engaged in the decision-making process with respect to personnel issues. But preventative counseling really goes beyond that. It deals, for example, with training HR professionals, and that's certainly something that I do a lot of, as well as my colleagues in the firm. So it may be putting on various seminars or training sessions having to do with how to hire employees, how to fire employees, how to discipline employees, give clients training as to just informative issues as the law changes. And as we know, every day the law is evolving and changing. So certainly have training sessions where we are giving legal updates, that kind of thing. Now, it also involves situations in which we sit down with our HR professionals and help draft their policies and procedures for the company. And one of the ways that we do that, and we do that quite often, is help draft or completely draft their employee handbooks. And, of course, we sit down with the company and let them know certain policies that they must have given their size and the various states that they're in and what they must provide to their employees. And then there may be other issues where we'll sit down with them and go through an extensive list of certain policies that they might want to consider adopting. And if they choose to adopt those policies, we'll incorporate those in their handbooks. But really, I think the cornerstone in the whole preventative counseling is a communication with our clients where we're either giving them training or legal information or guidance to make sure that they are not doing anything that's going to expose them to litigation.
And, you know, so often we call on you as an attorney after we're in trouble.
That's right.
You know, other than the handbook. I mean, we think, well, we better get somebody to write our handbook. But the typical thing is we don't call for outside legal advice until we have a problem that we either don't know how to handle it or we think we're going to get in trouble. What kind of advice could you give our HR people in terms of annual tune-ups, periodic maintenance? I mean, I don't know what you would call it, but obviously there must be something we should be doing.
Well, what I often find is that clients don't want to call you because they're afraid of incurring legal fees. And they're just afraid maybe a 10 or 15-minute conversation with their attorney you know, it's going to result in a bill, so therefore they don't want to incur that expense. And what I generally tell clients, and I certainly tell individuals who come to some of the training sessions and the seminars that I provide, is that you want to be smart, and you don't want to be, what's the saying, that you don't want to have to worry about saving maybe 10 or 15 minutes of attorney time to get preventive counseling and then all of a sudden have to deal with defending a lawsuit. Because quite frankly, defending a lawsuit, even a frivolous one, is going to cost you a whole heck of a lot more time and money than it will just to pick up the phone to ensure that whatever steps that you're taking are appropriate and compliant with the law.
Okay. My producer has let me know it's time for us to take a break for a commercial, so don't go away, Grace. We'll be right back to you in a minute.
All right.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
Well, Grace, you're still with us there?
I'm still here.
Okay, that's great. You know, we were talking about what a client should be doing to take advantage of your services. How would you describe the perfect HR client?
Well, boy, that's like describing the perfect human being. So that's a little difficult to answer. But I think the ideal HR client is one that I think really treats us as their partners, as opposed to just somebody that they're going to contact if or when they ever get in trouble. Because it's like everything else. I think when you have a good open communication with your employment counsel, throughout the course of your day-to-day activities or what various projects that you're working on, what you're going to do is, first and foremost, you're going to educate your employment counsel as to, one, what your business is, what your business objectives are, what it is that you hope to accomplish through your personnel decisions. You're going to educate them as to what your particular style is. There's going to be some HR professionals that say, look, we don't want to ever be in a position where we're litigating issues. We really want to resolve cases even if we feel the claims are frivolous. Or there's other times that there's HR professionals that say, you know, we will fight things to the absolute end because we can't set a precedent of having employees without sound reasons making claims against us. We don't want to be held hostage to this threat of having to be drawn through some lengthy, costly litigation. So by having an open communication with a good employment counsel, you are, right off the bat, you are going to be educating that particular counsel. But more importantly, by having an open dialogue with your counsel, you are going to give yourself an opportunity of having the best advice as you make decisions. You are going to have the privilege of knowing what the state of the law is in any given period, and there's no second guessing. And you're also going to have an opportunity to have your counsel review documents, guide you through what you need to do in order to make the best possible decision. So, I think an ideal HR person is one that's going to recognize that, appreciate that, and take advantage of that. Because if they do so, and if they are faced with a situation where they're dealing with litigation, which is very possible, especially in California, we see more employment case filings than really just about anything else. So it is not unusual for any company to be named as a defendant in an employment claim, in an employment lawsuit. But if you have had a good relationship with your counsel, your documentation is in good order, you are really giving yourself the best tool to defend these cases.
Grace, what do you see as the most common mistakes that are being made in today's environment?
Well, the mistakes really vary on whether you're dealing with HR professionals or really managers that are responsible for reviewing, doing performance reviews, that kind of thing. So really, we see less of mistakes from the HR world than we do from the actions of a manager. And one of the most common mistakes that we have is that performance reviews for employees don't truly reflect how a particular person is performing. So it would not be uncommon where you have a situation where a manager is not happy with their subordinate, they're not doing a good job, they're not meeting the expectations of the job, they're poor performers. and maybe you have the manager verbally, you know, talk to other managers about the issue or even to HR, but come time to do a performance evaluation and to put all these issues into writing, managers have a difficult time doing that because I think it's just human nature. It's one thing to verbalize concerns that you may have with someone, but when you put it in writing, it just seems harsh to many people. So what ends up happening is that you could have an employee that's had a history of very poor performance, poor work product, attendance issues, whatever the case may be. And although the manager may know that and may have discussed it, but it never made it into the file. And should that particular employee be let go and then they file an employment claim saying that they were let go for some illegal reason, such as harassment or discrimination, well, then you look at the employment file, you look at the performance reviews, and let's say on a scale of 1 to 5, it was just 3, mediocre. Well, mediocre says you're just doing enough to be satisfactory. You don't have to be the star employee to be to keep your job. You can just barely meet the minimum requirements, and you're going to be okay. And, you know, as time goes on, and we know with the backlogs in the court, you're not necessarily going to be going to trial immediately. And as the months and the years kind of fade, as the litigation is ongoing, managers begin to lose the details of what those performance issues are. And when those details aren't into place or it can't be articulated clearly and specifically, then what you have is a situation where it becomes more and more difficult for the employer to defend the reason why somebody was terminated or an adverse employment action was taken against them. So I think the biggest mistake that I see from an HR perspective or from an employee management perspective is that performance issues are not properly documented.
And, you know, I can just agree with you. I see this all the time. People are as managers, they decide they want to let go of somebody, but they look at the past performance reviews and there'd be no indication that that was ever going to happen.
That's right.
But, you know, and sometimes people's performance does change dramatically, but more often than not, it's consistently been the way it is, and we just haven't been willing to confront people in terms of documentation.
That's right. That's right. It's for some reason we see over and over again. It's a difficult thing for managers to do, and I think the HR professionals really need to be involved with performance evaluations for employees and make sure that they are giving the managers the proper tools in order to do the evaluations. And part of that is make sure that there's a good job description because you really, the performance issues should go off of what the expectations of the job are. So therefore, you identify what the job is, what the duties are. And then based on that, you want to go through that checklist and see how the employee is dealing, whether or not they are satisfying or each of the duties that have been identified for their jobs.
But Grace, let me ask you this. I mean, real world, we know that 90% of the job descriptions are out of date. They're very wordy. They're very vague. They were written sometime prior to recently.
Right.
You know. We know that people, especially in the economy we've been in recently, people's job descriptions on the floor are changing constantly daily. As we cut back on people, we ask other people that are staying to take on more tasks, and that doesn't get reflected in a job description. And we know that when it comes time to do the performance evaluation, that this is not usually high on the supervisor's list. They got other work to do. They got client stuff that they want to do. How do we get around this? I mean, it just seems to be a built-in issue. Even though we know what we should do, it doesn't really happen.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, you know, I wish I had an answer to that. And if I did, I would truly write a book immediately. And I think it may make the bestseller list.
Absolutely.
But you really, what you're talking about, Doug, is just no different than people having conceptually understanding that they should eat healthy and exercise, but somehow don't find the time or the desire or the inclination to do so. This is really no different from that. really, I think what I mean, other than really telling companies or HR people that it is an important task and they really ought to do it, I don't know how in this economy, when there's so much pressure on the American worker to do so many things, carry such a burden to make time for these things. But I think what we find to be helpful is the same reason that we encourage our clients to have sexual harassment and discrimination prevention training. We find that when you train managers and employees, when you give them the training, you give them the information, and you explain to them why it is important to do certain things or not to do certain things, there's a greater chance of them actually performing these tasks. So, for example, if you were to provide management training to your managers, and one of which is, for example, how to do performance reviews, and in that, when you go through and identify what the ultimate consequences are for doing improper reviews, not paying attention to the job descriptions, leaving job descriptions either outdated or incorrect given the nature, given changes in the job, I think when you go back and explain to them, should an employee file a lawsuit, how that those failure to do the right things will impact the defense of a lawsuit, I think that supervisors will more likely put that on top of their list of things to do. Because whenever you present anything in the forms of action and consequence, I think that's really your best bet in getting the response that you're looking for.
You know, and I love the example you gave about the fact that we all know we should eat healthy, but we don't, or a lot of us don't. And I think the people that have been able to switch their eating habits, let's say, are people that not only, it's not just a matter of educating them once so that they know, yes, I intellectually know I should eat healthier, but it's a matter of constant coaching, reinforcement, and training so that I don't slip off the wagon, so to speak. And I think that's maybe where our HR departments could maybe do a little bit more. It's not that they don't necessarily train once. It's just that training me 4 years ago on how I should do something doesn't mean I'm really at the forefront of my mind today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we spoke about the preventative counseling that we do as employment lawyers, and that really is an opportunity where you can take advantage of these kinds of trainings. It doesn't always have to fall on the shoulders of the HR department, because quite frankly, HR in of itself is extremely overburdened in this, I think, in this economy in particular, because they have to deal with so many issues. And again, especially if you are an HR person in California, where, you know, we have the very quirky laws and very strict laws about so many aspects of employment, they're really, really overwhelmed. But if they were to take advantage of getting to know their employment counsel, whether it's, you know, not necessarily our firm, but certainly our firm has many, many training opportunities. But talk to the employment firm that you work with and see what kind of in-house training that they do. Because we really, really think the cornerstone to taking any kind of preventative measures is the training and providing information, the professionals, the managers, knowledge about what the law says in the employment area. So certainly, for example, our firm routinely does an HR 101 types of series. Well, I mean, those are series that would be ideal to send your more junior HR professionals, but they also make a whole lot of sense to send your management level employees, because at that point you're telling them how to deal with perhaps a disability issue with an employee, what you need to be aware of in case somebody makes a complaint. It really opens the door for a lot of things.
Well, and you know, and I think you really have a good point there, because it's not just the HR people. It is it is the direct supervisors that need this kind of constant reinforcement and training and reminders. My experience is most of the HR people, even the junior people in the HR department, they know what should be done, but they're not out there interfacing with the employees.
That's right. Majority of the cases that you see don't say that, you know, at some point they refer to the actions of the HR department, but more often than not, they're really talking about the actions of their immediate supervisors.
Well, you know, we're going to take a break for a commercial, but when we come back, I want to ask you about the two most difficult times, I think, for an employee and for the HR department, and that is the hiring interview and the exit interview. And maybe you can give us some tips there. But let's take a break right now.
All right.
If you're a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gaffella has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives in the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Well, we're talking to Grace Arupian of Fisher & Phillips, and Grace, the question here is the two most critical times for an employee and really for a manager or HR professional, the hiring interview and the exit interview. What advice can you give us there?
Well, I think the hiring and terminations are really important, especially when you are dealing with a down economy. And the reason for that, Doug, is that what we've seen is when the economy is not doing well and you have the kinds of levels of unemployment that we're seeing these days, what we also see is that there's a corollary spike in the number of employment cases. So from the hiring perspective, what we see is a really dramatic rise in claims for unlawful failure to hire. So from the hiring perspective, what is important to keep in mind is that you really need to be mindful of the fact that when you have this number, when you have high unemployment rates, there's going to be a lot of people that are looking for jobs. And unfortunately, and this is not a moral comment, but it just happens to be a fact, that there may be people that will think that the reason that they didn't get the job was not because they weren't the most qualified person or they weren't qualified. It was because of some other unlawful purpose. For example, their religious beliefs or the fact that they had a disability or their race or color or something like that. So in the hiring process, what is really, really important, again, is to first and foremost to identify where it is that you are going to be posting your want ads and how you're posting. So, for example, you don't want to say we are looking for, males between the ages of 20 and 30 who are physically fit in order to fill this position. I mean, unless that there's an absolute legitimate business need for having a certain criteria. So in other words, you don't want to send a message in your employment ad saying that you are only looking to hire young males. Another thing that's really important is once you decide to have to hire, you again want to be very clear at that point. Take advantage of the opportunity to create a job description for the position that you're hiring. And the reason that it's really, really important to have a good job description is because at that point, what you want to do is take that job description and educate all the team of people who will be doing interviews to tell them that the kinds of questions that they ought to be asking really have to go to whether or not somebody's qualified to perform the specific duties identified in the job description. And lastly, you want to make sure that all supervisors are, or whomever is going to be involved in the interview process, is educated as to what is a proper or improper question to ask. So, for example, you might want to let the interviewing team know that it's not proper to ask how old is somebody. But on the contrary, you can ask, are you over the age of 18? It would not be proper, for example, to ask somebody, are you Hispanic? But it may be proper to ask, do you speak a second language, or do you speak Spanish? If speaking Spanish, for example, is an important requirement of the job. So you really want to be careful about the verbiage that the people who are interviewing use when making employment decisions. And if you follow these, what you're doing is really creating an insurance policy for yourself where somebody can't come in and say that you use the wrong criteria to hire them or not hire them.
Okay. And how about the exit interview? What do we need to be careful of there?
Well, on the exit interview, again, in a down economy, what we're finding is that obviously, again, as companies are doing more and more layoffs and they're tightening their belts, they need to make decisions as to who to let go. So before letting somebody go, you are going to have to make sure in this kind of economy, because, again, when you have a lot of terminations, your chances of getting a wrongful termination lawsuit go up. So what you want to do is make sure that the personnel file properly reflects that the person really can be terminated. So, for example, if you decide that you need to reduce your workforce by 5 employees, and the criteria that you're going to use is that you're going to let go of your 5 worst performers. Well, what you want to do is make sure to go to the personnel files of those 5 performers and ensure that you have documented performance issues. And you also want to make sure that the performance issues that have been documented are really that you can identify them as the lower performer. So in other words, let's say you have a situation where somebody's been written up 3 times for coming to work late. Well, one of the questions you might want to ask yourself is, well, what about everybody in that particular department? Are they all timely other than this person? Now, if you find out that there's numerous other people that have the similar type of write-ups, well, then it's going to be hard for you to say, well, we're letting go of you because you've had 3 write-ups for being late. You want to make sure that you have proper criteria that can really distinguish the people you want to let go for performance issues from the people that you're deciding to keep. And the next thing that's really, really important is in economic times like this, if you are doing a significant number of layoffs, this is the most critical time, and I cannot emphasize enough, this is the most critical time to pick up the phone and go through these layoffs with your employment counsel for a number of reasons. One, you want to make sure that you know whether or not you are triggering any laws that require certain notifications, for example, the Federal WARN Act. You want to see if there's perhaps it would make sense to put together severance agreements, and if you do decide to give severance packages for people you're letting go, you want to make sure that there's proper release language. You want to make sure that they're drafted in a way that that addresses certain specific laws, for example, age discrimination laws that would require any kind of a severance agreement to have specific waiting periods involved. These are times I think would absolutely be the most critical time to pick up the phone and talk to your counsel and make sure the terminations you're doing are going to be compliant with the law and that you do whatever steps or that you follow whatever steps you need to protect yourself.
Boy, that is great advice, and we should send everybody that's listening an invoice for this advice. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your directness in addressing both of those areas, which are really very, very difficult. You know, one of the things that I noticed in your write-up is that you also deal in the area of misappropriation of trade secrets. And, you know, trade secrets is such a vague term to me and to so many of my clients. I mean, is it the client list? Is it our secret sauce formula? I mean, what are we talking about there? What are trade secrets? What are the things we need to be concerned about?
Well, certainly your question is again, the subject of litigation that goes on for many, many months. Really, the gist of what we're talking about with the trade secret is, for example, not all client lists are necessarily going to be trade secrets. What really is going to come down to is whether or not you have a situation in which whatever you're talking about, the client list, the secret sauce to your hamburgers, to your bidding process, is it something that you've spent a substantial amount of time developing? Is it something that you do not want your competitors to know because should they be privy to that information, it's going to give them an economic or a competitive advantage in competing with you? And really, these are the general principles. Now, whether any specific thing is going to qualify as a trade secret is really one of those fact-specific things and what many, many companies fight amongst themselves. So one of the things that you can do to protect yourself or your company's trade secrets is, first and foremost, as you're hiring employees, you want to make sure you identify the kinds of things that you consider trade secrets. So for example, our client list, our pricing information, our bidding process, whatever it is that you consider to be your proprietary information, you want to identify those. And then you want to have your employees sign a confidentiality agreement, acknowledging that these are things that they are kept that you value, that you can consider to be your proprietary information, because then it would be very difficult for anybody to go back and say, "Well, I didn't know that you considered this to be a secret. You never told me." So that's the first part of it. The next part of it is that if you identify something as a trade secret, treat it like that. So, for example, if your client list are trade secrets, and you don't want the whole world to know, well, perhaps consider keeping your client list under a confidential file that not everybody in the company has access to. So these are the things that you really have to go through on a case-by-case basis to determine what's a trade secret.
Okay. But that's great advice that I hadn't heard before, is that you take a step forward in this area by defining in the hiring process what you want to consider trade secrets, and that gives you a good start.
That's right. And even in the exit interview, that's your prime opportunity to go back and pull out that same document and say, "Do you remember when you signed this when we hired you?" Because at the time you're hiring someone, they're likely to sign just about anything. But at the time that you're leaving, it's a perfect time that you can pull up the same confidentiality agreements, same documents that says, "Please remember, these are all the things that you were privy to while you're here are our trade secrets, and we expect you to maintain the secrecy of this information."
Great advice. You know, one of the other questions we like to ask our guests is, what's a painful lesson that you've had in your career? You know, we all think we're the only ones that went through some awkward, painful learning curve. And what can you share with us as a painful learning lesson?
Well, let's see. Look, there's probably been many. In the nature of what I do, Doug, I mean, sometimes we win cases that we probably didn't expect to win, and sometimes you just lose cases that you didn't expect to lose. I think one of the most painful lessons for any litigator is failing to manage the expectations of the client. So from my perspective, I mean, I've had cases where I've just thought, my goodness, this has got to be a slam dunk, and there's no way that we're not going to win this. But then you find yourself in a situation where you go to trial, and for whatever reason, you're really putting your fate in the hands of 12 strangers that you've tried your best to vet on the jury pool, but you generally don't know them. And sometimes juries don't necessarily follow the law, don't necessarily do what they're supposed to do. Sometimes they rule or they go in a way to reflect who in the case they liked. So you can certainly have a situation where sometimes you can have wonderful facts, but the witnesses that you have, for whatever reason, the jury doesn't like them. And perhaps the jury decides, well, they're not going to believe your witnesses, even though there's no reason for it. So I think it's really important, and a painful lesson I've certainly had, is that you have to go in, you give your best analysis of the case, you go through everything that you can. You always have to caution clients, and you certainly have to caution any party going through trial, that once you go to trial, the human nature comes into play, and therefore there's no 100% way to predict what any jury pool will do. So there's certainly risks, and they have to be prepared for that.
You know, I think that's great advice for any professional service person, is that of managing your client expectations. Whether you're the producer of a radio show or whether you're a litigation attorney, just managing the client expectations is probably a big job that I don't think I've ever seen on the job list.
That's right. That's right. But when you don't do that, it's a painful lesson to learn.
Yep, it is. Well, look, you have been wonderful today. I mean, we talked beforehand, and there's a few questions here that I told you I was going to ask you, but I've thrown a whole lot of other ones right out of the dark at you, and you've done a fantastic job of answering them. So,
well, thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Let me just ask you one last question before we kind of wrap up here. If you could change anything in this area that you deal in, what would you change?
Boy, now that's a really tough one. You know, honestly, there's not a whole lot. I mean, I really couldn't identify anything that we could change. I mean, the laws in the country, in our state, are the laws. Individuals, I think, you know, do the best that they can, and we have to accept the fact that, again, we're dealing with human beings, and people are going to make certain decisions. So it's going to be what it's going to be. But at the same time, I think if I could have one wish list that I could give out to my clients, I would say really pay attention to training yourselves, train your supervisors, make sure that you have good open communications with various sources that can really tell you whether or not what you're doing is compliant with the law.
Great. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
It
I hope you
wonderful.
Get your wish. Well, Grace, is there anything else that we've not talked about or that I've kind of stepped over your conversation on that you'd like to make any final comments on?
I don't think so, Doug. I think we've covered a lot today.
Well, we have covered a lot. So before we sign off here, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Well, they can just go on our firm website, which is www.laborlawyers.com. And I think anybody who goes onto the website can certainly find me in my email, and at any time can send me an email. And also, anybody who goes on our website will find that we have a wealth of information for all HR professionals. There's newsletters, legal updates, there's industry-specific information, there's state laws, there's access to various webinars on just every kind of imaginable topic, from immigration to harassment to discrimination training. So just about anything you can possibly want in information, we do make that available to the public on our website, and I really hope that people take advantage of it.
It is a great website. I've been on it, and boy, you'd be foolish not to take advantage of it. Grace, thank you very much for taking the time today to appear on Critical Mass, and welcome to our Critical Mass business community.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too.
Well, we've been listening to Grace Harupian from Fisher and Phillips. If you've missed it, kick yourself. You missed a great interview, but you don't have to miss it. You can go onto our website, criticalmassforbusiness.com. You can go on to octalkradio.net's website, and you can find this this interview, which will be posted early next week, and you can listen to it at your leisure. If you don't like either one of those, look for us in iTunes. And as I discovered the other day by coincidence, hey, if you've got Apple TV, you can find it under Apple TV there too. So, hey, we're everywhere. Well, look, this is something that my business partner Rick Franzi and I do. The radio shows are an extension of our 18-year business practice where we build CEO peer groups for executives here in Orange County, all under the brand of Renaissance Executive Forums. And Rick and I are currently leading multiple CEO peer groups here. If you'd like to learn more about our peer groups or about our coaching practice, I'd encourage you to check out our website to listen to the Tuesday and Wednesday shows where Rick interviews top CEOs in Orange County, and be sure to come back to our Thursday show and listen to our tips for HR professionals and people in the coaching field. We will be dark next week, so you'll just have to re-listen to some of the great interviews that we've had in the last 3 years. We'll be looking forward to coming back, and I'll be back with you the first week in October. So this is Doug Gefeller, thanking you on behalf of my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I, and hoping that you have been able to get some new information and ideas that you can use to make better, more informed decisions.
You've been listening to The Coaching Perspective, only on OCTalkRadio.net.